Broadcasting live from Studio 1A in Brooklyn, New York. This is Empire State Reptiles Live, specializing in connecting breeders and fans worldwide. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Empire State Reptiles Live. My name is Chris, and I am back here as your host once again, as I was about 2 weeks ago. I know that I've been definitely slipping out with the shows, but a lot of things have come up recently in regards to personal life matters, and as well as I celebrated my birthday over there this past week, so that was very much of family affairs, so I definitely had to dedicate some time to my family during the last week, actually. So we're going to get right back on track with the show. I know we had about a minute delay there because of some Wi-Fi issues that has been persistent these couple of months, and we're definitely working on getting those issues resolved so we can have a nice, fluid show. Now, today we're starting off our show. We're actually starting off a series that I had in mind. I never really tell you guys about these series, which I think I should start doing. But we're going to pay a little bit of dedication towards the smaller breeders in the hobby. Now, what I mean by smaller breeders is basically people that are less known in the hobby. So we're definitely starting that off with only tanks, which I think is definitely underrated in the hobby. The geckos that Barry produces are just astonishing, and if you don't see them, if you have never seen his geckos, I have definitely put some in the little slideshow area where the player should be on your phone right now. So if you go ahead and take a look, you can scroll through. I think I only have two right now, but I will be adding more throughout the show. So you can take a look at some of the animals he has produced and on some of the animals that he is working with, and get a little bit of a sense on what type of animals he produces and things like that. Now, next week, we were going to do something a little bit different. We're shaking up Empire State Reptiles Live. Now, our main goal of starting this show was to be able to connect people worldwide. And next week, we will be doing that for the first time. Next week, we're going to be talking, I don't recall the guy's name. I'm very sorry for that. I'm not prepared. But next week, we'll be talking with a veterinarian in Bali. He is actually an exotic animal vet in Bali, sorry. And we'll be talking to him. So it's going to be a little bit hectic next week because definitely different time zones. So we're still working out the logistics on exactly when we're going to execute this and how we're going to execute it. So there are definitely going to be a little bit of hecticism during that whole entire show. However, we will be working diligently to produce a nice fluid show, which I like to produce every single week. So enough with me talking and everything like that. I think you guys want to hear what you came here for, and that is to talk to Barry Gardner of Only Tangs. Good evening, Barry. How are you doing?
Thanks, Chris. I'm doing well.
Good, good, good. So you want to start off by telling us a little bit about what you're working with and what's going on in your life?
Well, obviously, by the name of my business, I concentrate mostly on tangerine varieties. I do have a few others besides that, but that's my emphasis.
All right. So you're strictly working with the leopard geckos currently, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. So in the world of tangs, like, basically, what are you working with? Like, what variations with the tangs are? Or is there a variation? Would you like to explain that for us a little bit?
Yeah, I started breeding about 10 years ago with Trempers, and I decided to change course about 3 years ago and bought some very high-quality Tremper blood tangerines. and liked them so much that 2 years ago I decided to go all out and buy some phenomenal animals internationally, and actually started in with Mandarin tangerines with the Noir Desire Black Eye morph, which is a relatively new variety. I think I was the first person in the United States to import them, and had a bunch of good animals last year.
Oh, that's great. So you said that you actually imported some animals. So how did you go about doing that, and what was it like?
It's actually relatively easy. I contacted a breeder online, and he was able to ship me animals through the Ham Show in northern Germany, and they 24-hour overnighted them to my home, and they arrived safe and sound, and I've done it several times since then. And I've shipped to the Ham Show in order to ship worldwide.
Oh, that sounds really great. Yeah, as most of you, some of you definitely know what the Ham Show is, but that's how a lot of breeders in the U.S. get those international specimens or animals, if you should say, through the Ham Show. A lot of people get them through the Ham Show. So a lot of people love your lemon frost. Now, I think that is one of my favorite geckos that you have, your lemon frost. So would you mind talking a little bit about the lemon frost and how you were able to produce an animal with the stunning eyes that this animal has?
Well, all of the lemon frosts have essentially the same eyes, unless they're albinos. Their eyes are amazing. They're almost a light baby blue with black veins. But
yes,
if you have a lemon frost, you have the white eyes. And I was fortunate enough to buy a couple of lemon frosts from Steve Sykes of Geckos, et cetera, last fall. And I produced my first couple this year. And one that's about 5 weeks old that I've posted several pictures of on Instagram that is a spectacular animal. The mother was a super hypo tangerine lemon frost bred to one of my Mandarin tangerine Noir Desire Black Eye.
Okay. So when you are breeding your animals, are you specifically looking for the eye colorations, or what are you specifically looking for?
Well, my goal with this breeding was not for this year. My goal is to produce a lemon frost Noir Desire, and it wouldn't be a black eye. It would probably be more like a shattered white glass eye. So I don't know what I would call it, Noir Desire White.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. That sounds really cool. So when jumping into tangerines, basically what did you start with when you first got into those tangerines?
I bought some very high quality blood tremper tangerines. Mm. And
nice orange.
And then I started looking at pictures online of the Mandarin tangerines, and actually had a very hard time finding them. 3 years ago, nobody was breeding them, except for a couple of producers in Europe.
So and the Mandarin. Go ahead. No, you can go ahead.
When I found a breeder that produced really high quality Mandarin tangerines, I also noticed that he was producing this new variety of Mandarin tangerines that had kind of an unusual black eye that they call the NDBE or the Noir Desire Black Eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he would be interested in kind of doing a cooperative program here in the United States where I could buy some of his animals and breed them under his name, and he basically said, no, you can buy some of my animals. Never sold any to the United States, and so I was able to procure some heterozygous and homozygous animals from a breeder in Slovenia by the name of Fran Loka at Cool Lizard.
Okay. All right. So I'm still just dumbfounded on this whole eye thing. So have you found the eye trait when you're breeding, like, let's say crossbreeding between the two, have you seen it carry on into the other offspring? If you're ever breeding,
yes,
go ahead.
It's an autosomal recessive, meaning it's a recessive gene, and it breeds true. The animals that possess the trait, the visuals, they have some light sensitivity issues, but they're very healthy animals. And they have no problems.
Okay.
And they're healthy. The female animals with the trait, or with the visual trait, are a bit hard to breed, and nobody's quite sure exactly why that is. It's just people have had difficulty breeding the visual females, but the visual males have no problem reproducing, and I think we'll get that worked out in the next 4 or 5 years as to why the females are difficult to breed. They do produce, but they're just difficult to get pregnant and difficult to get to lay eggs.
Okay, I see where we're going with that. So you talked a little bit about eye sensitivity, and that's obviously a sign, maybe some type of linebred syndrome with that particular morph. So I know that you do work with enigmas also. So have you been seeing anything in your enigma line or anything like that, such as eye sensitivity or wobbling or anything to that effect?
I haven't seen any neurologic issue with the NDBE line, other than they're sensitive to light, but then so are most of the, or so are all of the albino lines. So not a whole lot different than the three different albino lines and leopard geckos, but none of my experience with the Noir du Zar black eyes has shown any neurologic abnormalities or behavioral abnormalities like you see in Enigma and White Neal.
All right, so, like I was saying before, have you, since you are working with Enigmas, have you ever seen anything particular in Enigmas, or has your line basically bred that out? Have you bred that out of your line, or is it still lingering there?
Enigma is actually not something that you breed out of a line. It's a dominant trait, and so if you've got it, you've got it, and you know it, and if you don't, you don't. I actually have two Mandarin Tangerine Enigmas, one female, one male, and neither one of them show Enigma syndrome, that where they spin and have a hard time acquiring their food. But my experience with Enigmas is they're slobs. You can clean their cage one day, and the next day, it's like a hurricane blew through it. For some reason, they're just sloppy, messy slobs. But they thrive well, they eat well, they reproduce well. And unless you've got one with really bad Enigma syndrome, which makes it so they have a hard time even eating because they can't attack their prey, they're actually very good pets.
Definitely. So why did you decide to get into tangerines in the first place? I know it seems that tangerines are becoming the new hottest thing, I would say. I've seen an increase of a lot of people just focusing on the tangerines, as well as I see a lot of people focusing on the Diablo Blanco goes now. So what made you definitely just jump right into only those tangerines and those orangey colors? So Blood and Marines also, and anything with orange in it. Let's put it like that.
I like the how vivid the orange has become over the last 3 or 4 years. When I first got into the hobby, the orange was muted. It wasn't nearly as vivid as it is now. And the mm-hmm. breeders who have been in the hobby for, you know, 10, 15 years have done a phenomenal job really making beautiful orange animals. And I decided to focus on just a small aspect of the leopard geckos and try to produce the best that I could and try to acquire the best that I could in that narrow range. So I don't, other than a couple of animals that I have just for fun, I don't have any other animals other than albinos and tangerine morphs.
That's very cool. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever want to call in to ask Barry any type of questions that you might have about his animals and what he's doing over there with the geckos, you can give us a call at 713-955-0793. Once again, that is 713-955-0793. So, what were your plans last season? So, what did you produce last season?
Well, I bred a Mandarin tangerine that was heterozygous for the Noir Desire Black Eyes to a female Mandarin tangerine who supposedly did not carry the gene. And after the babies were about 6 weeks old, I sold a couple of them to Asia. And then one day mm-hmm. I was looking closely at them and realized these are visual Noir Desire Black Eyes. And okay. I was shocked. I wasn't quite sure what to do. I contacted the people who I sold them to and let them know, hey, you're getting something better than what you planned on.
Of course.
And then I looked at my other animals, and I had another 4 or 5. I produced a total of 8 last year. So the chances of breeding with 2 heterozygous animals, the recessive trait is 1 in 4. Fortunately, the female I had produced 25 eggs last year, and I produced a total of 8 visual Noir Desire Black Eyes, which was pretty astounding, pretty unusual.
Definitely.
For leopard geckos. I mean, you know, 12 is probably average.
Rich.
And it was a very lucky combination, the male and the female that I bred, because there wasn't a single gecko in that breeding that wouldn't be considered a 10-plus animal.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's wow. Never knew about that. Yeah, that's beyond lucky, actually. So, what are your plans looking like for this breeding season? I know that we're getting up there and that mid-range for the breeding season, but not quite there, almost there.
Well, all the animals that I have that are going to be bred have been bred, and I've already got 30 hatched and 50 incubating and probably another 50 to 80 eggs expected. I have 5 Mandarin tangerine females, some of which are possibly het Noir Desire Black Eyes, a couple of which are known hets that are being bred by one of my visuals and one of my hets. So the same pairing I did last year that produced my really nice Mandarins, I repeated this year, and I'm hoping that she lays a bunch of eggs like she did last year. I'm probably sold out of my Mandarin tangerines, even though I've only had one.
Man.
With all those breedings.
Oh.
I've got over 50 on potential hold.
Wow. Wow, that's great, man. That is definitely great. So, go ahead.
It's not a bad problem to have, but it's also a nerve-wracking problem to have because you want to please your customers and you want to provide people with what they want, yet you don't know if you're going to have enough animals to be able to fulfill your commitments.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like, I know that whole business and everything like that. I've definitely been on hold for a bunch of animals, and I know it's disappointing to see that that you're not going to get the animal because you're too late to get on a hold list, but it is what it is. It's Mother Nature. You can't really do much about it, but just look at it high and hope for next season. So, what is your favorite pair so far? Your favorite pairing and that has produced something that you're just blown away by?
Well, last year I would have said the pairing that produced the Mandarin Tangerines, the female that produced 25, but this year I have to say the super hypo tangerine bred to my Noir Desire Mandarin Tangerine male, Lemon Frost, the super hypo Lemon Frost, has produced two, and the one that's on Instagram is just amazing. And
tell me about it.
I never thought I'd like a non-orange animal quite as much as I like what I assume is a boy.
Okay. So I know that you also have you're working with some blood amarins. Now I know about 3-4 I think it might be 5 years ago when I was interested in the blood amarins. I know that they were definitely on the pricey side, or like $400-$500 a piece.
Uh-huh.
So what are your plans with your bloods? I know that they do produce those dark, I'm not even sure what you would call them, but blood orange, of course, blood orange colors. So mm-hmm. What are your plans with those looking like?
Well, I bought a blood amarine from a breeder in Florida by the name of Artie Sounds.
Okay.
About a year and a half ago, and I bred it to one of the animals I bought from Fran Lotka in Slovenia, which was a similar breeding, but not exact. And I produced some amazing babies last year. Last year was just a dream year. And I actually gave two of them to one of my best friends for his kids, a male and a female. And then I was contacted by JMG, and he wanted the remainder of my animals, and I ended up selling him my breeders too, my male and female, so he could produce these. And then later, late last year, I called my friend and I said, hey, can I borrow those two animals back so that I can produce a few more of these? And he graciously let me have them for the breeding season, and they've been producing very nice animals.
Definitely. So are you planning on doing any crossbreeding or anything like that with any of the other projects you have going on?
I'm thinking about next year breeding my visual Noir Desire Mandarin Tangerine to one or two of my female blood amarines, just to kind of get something different.
Yeah. I'm not sure what that would produce, but that sounds very cool.
So we'll see. I'm almost sold out of those, if not sold out. So I hope I have a couple I can keep for myself. And if not, my friend may have to take a couple of different animals home for his kids, which hopefully I will have. I'm a pretty small breeder. I only have 30 adults. And last year I only produced 45 babies. And this year I'm probably going to triple that, which to me is crazy, but
hey,
I enjoy it.
Of course. When you're producing amazing animals, there's definitely going to be all those people that want some. So are you planning on expanding, or do you like the little hobbyist thing going on? Because I know that you said you're an emergency physician, if I remember that from your biography.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so I imagine that takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, it does. But I've actually considered retiring a little early and going into this hobby full time. It'd be a good stress reduction, and it'd be fun.
Of course.
I don't want to get huge. I don't think I'd ever want to produce more than 200 babies a year. I want to concentrate on high quality and keep it that way.
Hey, quality over quantity is the way to go in this business.
It really is. I see a lot of really nice animals being sold for very low prices, and I see a lot of marginal animals being advertised for high prices. And I think if you establish the fact that you've got high quality animals, people are willing to pay for the quality, and that's that's my niche.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, recently I've been kind of forcing myself to go to some of the reptile expos in my area, as well as when I travel, because it's just crazy to see how little kids go into the reptile expo and they see all these high priced animals, but they're not even getting what they are advertised as, and false advertising here, false advertising there. It's just, it doesn't make sense to me, but people make a profit off of it, so I guess they enjoy doing it because they make more money off of it when they sell misadvertised animals, but it's definitely sad to see that happening.
Yeah, it was interesting today. I was actually in the Salt Lake City area of Utah. We have two reptile shows a year, and they're 2 days each, and so today we had a reptile show tomorrow, and I took four of my youngsters and three of my adults and set up with a friend of mine, and people were asking how much I sold my animals for, and they were shocked compared to what the animals were being sold for at other booths and the booth I was at. And yeah, it's amazing. People will, they'll sell anything, and not for much, but I tell people who want to get into breeding, spend as much money as you have.
Oh, of course.
Buy quality breeders that you know the genetics of if you want to do well in the hobby.
Definitely. And of course, people need to remember, just like driving a car, breeding is not for everybody. Some people can drive and be so successful at it, and some people can't even pass their road test. So breeding isn't for everybody. And I think a lot of people just see the green in it. And what I mean by seeing the green in it is money. But you also have to realize, when I first started breeding, I didn't make money for the first 2 to 3 seasons that I was breeding. So definitely it took a while to make money, let alone make all the money back that I spent and put into what I was producing. So it's not for everybody.
The first 8 years that I bred, I gave animals away, and last year was the first time that I sold. And I had a good year, but I think I put all the money that I made last year back into new breeding stock. Yeah, it's just kind of how it is.
you can't resist it. When you have the money, you see those beautiful animals at the shows and even online, you just can't resist hitting that buy button or handing over that cash. And I know I'm not sure if you have a partner or anything, but they can definitely get a little aggravated with you if you're spending too much on it. But hey, tell them you only live once.
Yeah. That's right. When Steve Sykes started advertising his Lemon Frost last year, it's like, how can I not buy at least one of these?
Of course.
I wish now I had bought a dozen. because they're so amazing.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. So I want to jump into a little bit of a section of the show I ask everybody a little bit about, and that is the husbandry part of keeping these animals. So I want you to give us a little bit of a rundown on how you keep your leopard geckos. I know most of us know how to keep leopard geckos, but of course we have some new listeners listening in, so they might be interested in knowing how you specifically keep yours.
Okay, well, I keep my adults in 32-quart Rubbermaid bins in racks. I keep them individual. I have a moist hide. I have a dry hide. They have constant food. I don't just feed them once a week. I actually change out my food every 3 days and take the old mealworms, put them back into the bedding, and put fresh mealworms in. So they have fresh worms available 24/7. The only time I put them together is during breeding season. As far as incubation, when the female lays eggs, with tangerine varieties, you actually get better color with warmer heat. Yet,
okay,
if you incubate at warmer heat, you get mostly males. So I incubate my females at 82 degrees for the first 22 days, and then I switch them over to an 88-degree incubator for the remainder of the incubation time, and you actually get more vivid colors that they retain into adulthood that way.
Okay.
When the babies hatch, they go into a 6-quart shoebox in a rack. Mm-hmm. I buy little styrofoam meat trays that fit perfectly into the shoeboxes, and cut a little door into the front and keep a moist paper towel in there. And then when they're about a week old, they'll shed, and you won't necessarily see them shed, but you'll know if they shed because they have the first poop. As soon as you see the first poop, then they're ready to have food. And I buy extra small and small mealworm.
All right. So I want to ask you a question that
something to eat.
All right. So I want to ask you a question about something that a lot of people, controversial to some, I don't understand why, but controversial to some. So I must respect their controversy around it. So how do you feel about sand and leopard geckos?
About what?
Sand.
I've never kept my leopard geckos on sand. You know, when I first started reading about them, it's like, doesn't make any sense that you couldn't keep your leopard geckos on sand, because in the wild, they're exposed to sand, but there are reports of them eating sand and becoming impacted, and
of course,
it's like, why take a chance? I don't know for sure if all the leopard geckos kept on sand are going to be unhealthy, but it's just better not to take a chance, especially with the enigmas that will pretty much eat anything, because
tell me about it.
they're not the smartest animals. They just,
of course.
And so why take a chance? Why put your animals on sand when they have the potential of becoming sick? It'll be kind of like, and this is also controversial, be like not immunizing your kids.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that is true.
Why take a chance?
Yeah, that's true.
Or not telling your kids to wear helmets when they're out riding a skateboard or a bicycle.
Or yeah, those are
not
all
wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah, those are all controversial. Everybody has their opinion on it. And, I can see some points with the immunizations and stuff like that. The sand, I'm kind of set in stone on that. But That is not what this whole show is about, so I won't go
into further detail.
Because why
risk the health of your animals if you know that they have the potential of getting sand impacted and you can prevent that by not putting them on sand?
Yes, that is the bottom line. I say no to sand. So that's basically what my view is on it, if anybody is curious. I want to jump into a little bit of the other morphs that you like besides the albino, because we have already established that you started with albinos. So what are some other morphs that you prefer and you like?
Well, obviously, Mandarin tangerines. That's kind of who I am. But I also like bloods. And I've recently started breeding coppers, which are a type of tremper. It's a high contrast tremper tangerine. More recently, I've gotten into rainwater albinos, specifically firewaters, which are tangerine rainwater albinos. And bright orange.
Oh. So I imagine your house is imagine your house is painted in orange. I said I imagine your house is painted in orange.
No. I just like orange animals. But I do have a few outliers, and the lemon frosts are one of them, but I'm breeding them to tangerines to try to make them orange because I know that they want to be orange. But I also have some Hungrameneus, which are the Turkish lidded geckos that get to be about 150 grams. They were actually given to me by a friend, and I call them my anger management pair because... anger management. They're wild. They're crazy. Oh. They hate being held. They scream at you when you open their drawer. But it cracks me up because the minute you hold them and they stop screaming, they're just kind of chill.
Okay.
They're wild. They're only a few generations down from being wild caught.
Ooh, okay.
And they're kind of fun.
All right, that sounds great. So you kind of bridged the gap that I was going to fill myself. So what type of other species are you working with besides the leopard geckos? Are you working with any subspecies or anything like that?
The only totally subspecies I have right now is the Hungrameneus, but they take 3 years to reach sexual maturity, and so I won't be breeding them for two more years. But another subspecies I like is Fuscus, which is an Eastern Indian gecko, which are absolutely gorgeous. And they're not orange, but they're still pretty.
All right. So you're definitely into other type of reptiles also. So what other type of reptiles appeal to you besides the leopard geckos?
I'm not big on snakes, but... I like snakes. I just don't want to own them. I actually like all reptiles. I love the species of geckos that come off of New Caledonia, like the
Rhacodactylus, most of them.
Yeah. Crested geckos, gargoyle geckos. They're just pretty, and they're unique. And to imagine that they all came from this little island in the middle of nowhere down by Fiji is crazy.
Yeah, that is definitely true. So as far as the tangerines go, what do you see the tangerine morph in, let's say, 5 years? What do you want the tangerine morph to be like in about 5 years, we could say?
I think whoever can develop a tangerine that looks red is going to be doing well. You know, 3 years ago, it was if you can produce 100% carrot tail, it's done. We're there.
Yeah.
So I think a true red would be, I think there's a lot of people who have that goal. And then I think eye varieties are going to be big in the next 2 or 3 years also. Hopefully with the Noir
Maybe
Desire.
Some red eyes.
Yeah, well, if somebody could produce an Eclipse, which is the gene that produces red eyes in albinos, and make one that looks as orange as a mandarin tangerine, they'd be gods.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the holy grail, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't even put a price tag on that. That would be some type of serious wait list right there.
Yeah.
Serious wait list.
The Steve Sykes with Geckos, et cetera, just produced the first Tremper Tangerine Lemon Frost, and it's got light pink eyes, and the iris slit is red, and it's amazing.
Wow.
And fortunately, I've got some of those on the way, too, from my second Lemon Frost, which is Hetfer Raptor, which is Tremper Albino Eclipse, and I bred it to a Tremper Albino that does not carry Eclipse gene. So I'm hoping to hatch one or two of those out this year.
All right. Yeah, so what eye coloration do you prefer? You brought up the Eclipse. I really do like Eclipse eyes. I think they're some of the most beautiful eyes.
I would love to produce a Mandarin Tangerine that has Eclipse eyes, that has the color of the Mandarin Tangerines as we know them now. People that have tried it, and I've tried it, the color of the body is ugly. And it has to do with the eye gene. And I'm not sure why it is, but I think somebody will eventually figure out how to make a black-eyed orange gecko that's pretty.
Yeah. Hopefully, in the next couple of breeding seasons, we'll be seeing a lot of change. I can guarantee you that.
No question. I think the big game changer in leopard geckos this year and in the next 5 years is the Lemon Frost. You're going to see a huge number of really interesting animals. Everything that we're seeing this year that people are producing, they're crazy. They're just like mind-blowing. This gene has changed everything.
Yes, that is definitely true. So, as you know, a lot of morphs have their rise and also their falls. So, and as well as the colors has their rise and their falls. So, if you, let's say in the next 10 breeding seasons, we see a rapid decline in the interest in the orange coloration of leopard geckos, where would you be turning to? Would you stay true to what you started with, or would you move in to something different? I know that I'm not 100% sure where the process is at with what do you call them? They have so many different names. They have the Dark Knight, the Black Pearl. They have so many different names, but you know, the black leopard gecko. We can just give it the common name, the black leopard gecko.
The black knights are the ones that were bred in Europe. The black pearls were bred in the United States.
Yeah. So
I've already considered getting those, but I would stay true to the tangerine. I would maintain a high quality line because things come back.
Yeah, that's
true. 12 years ago, Mandarin Tangerines were huge, and they're big again. I would just maintain a real high-quality line of Mandarins, but obviously I'd branch out. And who knows, you know, like the Lemon Frost popped up 3 years ago just sporadically from breeding a mutt to a mutt. And we don't know what's going to come up in the next couple of years. There could be something incredible just like it. I doubt it, but it's possible.
Yeah. Right, that's definitely true. So, what is some words of advice that you have to give some aspiring leopard gecko breeders, or specifically people that want to get into tangerines?
I would say number one is, if you want to breed, buy quality to begin with, because it's much less expensive and it's and you'll produce much higher quality animals if you buy very high quality animals to begin with. If you're in it for the hobby and you want to breed for fun, then you don't need to do that. But then you'll be contributing to the number of animals that are going to pet stores and are being bought and sold, bought and sold, bought and sold. If you want to produce high quality animals that reputable breeders will want to buy, start with high quality stuff. It's worth spending the money off the bat to know exactly what you're getting. If you're doing it for a pet, have fun and buy something cheap. Are you still there?
Oh, you couldn't hear me. I'm sorry about that. Wire got snagged a little bit. Sorry. One burning question that I have is, what do you use for your incubators? I know that you have a wine cooler, a converted wine cooler. Do you mind talking a little bit about that? How do you take a cooler, something that's supposed to chill something, and make it heat something up?
I actually had a person, a friend of mine who is also a breeder, said, hey, there's this guy that converts wine coolers into incubators. And so I contacted him, and it was actually delivered to me today at the reptile show. So I don't have it hooked up yet. Up until now, okay, I've been using just the regular styrofoam hovibaters, the, you know, things that are $150 bucks on Amazon, and they're great. They work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean people who want to get into an incubator that works, they are the best. Exoterra makes electric ones that have a fan and everything, and they suck. They break.
Yeah, I don't remember how much the Exoterra goes for, but I always see the people coming out all smiling jolly with their little Exoterra incubators, and I know they look so cool with the lights and everything like that, but Exoterra, but they're trash. That's one of the products that I absolutely hate of yours. But when I first started out, I would tell you the Hoverbaiter, I think it was the 1602N, if I'm not mistaken. I actually got it from LOL Reptile for $50. And it still works to this day, even though I'm not using it as often as I was before. But it works great. I even used it when I used to do the birds, the button quails. I used to use that. But it's very versatile, and it works good and cheap. If you're looking for something cheap, and that I don't think that model has a fan or not, but I'm pretty sure the $150 model has the fan and all the digital stuff. I'm not 100% sure what it has.
And if my wine cooler ends up being something that doesn't work well, I'm going back to my styrofoam incubator.
Of course.
It's like,
if it works. Yeah. Yeah. So
they maintain an incredibly consistent temperature too.
That is true. So what I would do admit, when I first started, I was kind of confused on how you set it, because it's a little Allen key type thing that you have to turn until you find the right temperature that you want. I'm not sure. Do you still have to do that with the model that you have, or is that digitally set? Or I'm not really.
I've got the digital models that I think you can buy them on Amazon for $150, and I've had them for 3 years, and they are spot on temperature wise. I bet I'm 95% on temperature sex, females and males.
Wow.
And I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. So where can people find your geckos, and where can people catch up with you and and just keep up to date on where you're producing, what you're producing.
I have a Facebook address, and it's only Tangs, two different words. I don't have a photo profile of what I have for sale, because usually I'm sold out.
Okay.
The next year.
Okay. All
now,
right.
If people contact me and I do have something available, or I can put them on a waiting list, then, you know, I never know what I'm going to produce, but my animals are almost always sold before they're born, which, again, is not a bad problem, but it's also nerve-wracking.
Yeah,
I'm also
definitely.
On Instagram at Barry Gardner.
All right. So thank you so much for taking some time out of your day, Barry, to come on here and talk to us a little bit. We really did enjoy having you on the show.
Thank you, Chris.
All right. Thank you. And we'll be talking to you very soon.
Okay. Have a good night.
Bye. You too. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think that does it for us tonight. I did not get a chance to put Barry's biography on the little description on Blog Talk Radio, but I will certainly do that because, as you know me, I was kind of running a little late into the studio to be able to put that all together and everything like that. So I will definitely be putting that on the website of Blog Talk Radio once I am done with the show. So like I said, next week we will be having a vet from the country of Bali on the show. We are still working out the logistics of that, and we will be updating you guys through our text message reminders and where and how we're going to do the show, as well as our Instagram page and also our Facebook page. And all of those are at ESR Live. And you can find us online at www.EmpireStateReptilesLive.com, and all of our schedule will be there, as well as more information on tonight's show, as well as more information on Barry. So once again, we thank you so much for tuning in tonight. I did not prepare any type of outro, so I still have some clips in this little thing that I had from last week. So I'm thinking about just playing a little bit. Let's see, who should I play? I'll play a little bit of What a Wonderful World. It has been a wonderful world, and it's so great to be a part of this amazing country and amazing world. So once again, I thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I will see you back here. Same time, same place, Blog Talk Radio. Actually, 6:30 next week, because, you know, we started late. 6:30 next week, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be talking to you guys very soon.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, dark say goodnight, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more and I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.